Today, the state of Washington looked at 75 years of a national marijuana prohibition and said, it is time for a new approach.
That was last week, election night, with Yes on 502 director Allison Holcomb. Whether you're for legalization or against it, the new law will change life for all of us. Advertising, nightlife, driving, the ripple effects are everywhere. Our state government will be granting licenses to marijuana farmers and retail stores. I'm Keith Seinfeld. Before the election, KPLU produced a series of stories on these topics. Now that it's about to be legal, we've expanded our stories for this special report on what's next for marijuana, now and in the future. The first change is just a few weeks away, on December 6th.
There will not be any arrests, and that's the difference.
That's Seattle City Attorney Pete Holmes. On December 6th, it's legal to possess up to a full ounce of marijuana, enough to get high every day for a month. Already, prosecutors are dropping charges for simple possession. Holmes and others who promoted the initiative made a big deal about reducing arrests. According to the American Civil Liberties Union, more than 9,000 people were arrested in Washington last year for marijuana possession. KPLU's Paula Whistle looks into how legalization might affect who goes to jail and how our communities are policed.
First of all, let's talk about just how much an ounce of marijuana is. Think of a small Ziploc sandwich bag. Now picture it about a quarter of the way filled with dried marijuana. That's an ounce. It could easily fit into your pocket. The question is, who's getting arrested now for having that on them? Looking for the answer, I get together with Pat Slack, the commander of the Snohomish Regional Drug Task Force. In his SUV, he tells me he spends about 30 hours a week driving to drug busts, stakeouts, and the like. Slack says, generally speaking, it's not somebody just out to get high who's getting arrested.
Are there people in jail for possession of marijuana? Yeah, they are. Most of them that are in jail have violated a parole or probation.
In other words, he says, their marijuana use led them to do other things.
So the judges said, you can't use marijuana because when you use marijuana, you commit other crimes. And now they get caught with it and they go to jail.
He says marijuana busts are an important part of law enforcement's arsenal when it comes to fighting crime. He says, let's say you get a call to go to the local 7-Eleven because of a public disturbance. You get there and find the perpetrators have marijuana on them. You can book them and take them to jail. Or you have a major crime case. You hold the suspect on a marijuana charge to buy time while you investigate.
Whether it was a strong-arm robbery or an armed robbery or a murder or a rape or whatever, you know, and so, it's a tool.
But the marijuana enforcement tool, say supporters of legalization, has been used unfairly against African American men. It's something black ministers, including Reverend Leslie Braxton of Renton, have been preaching about.
Being in support of I-502 is not about supporting drug use, it's about ending bad drug laws, which have been the major tool in the hands of racist law enforcement, unlawful law enforcement, to target our communities and to underdevelop our growth as a community because all our men are locked up.
Braxton was speaking in public forums in support of the initiative. The campaign supporters highlighted statistics showing that while marijuana use is about even between blacks and whites, black men are three times as likely as white men to go to jail for it. It's this disproportionality argument that fueled support for legalization from groups such as the NAACP and the American Civil Liberties Union. At the offices of the Tacoma Urban League, I sit down with Keith Blocker. His group, Tacoma Pierce County Black Collective, endorsed legalization. Blocker tells me he often feels he's under suspicion just because of his race. For example, recently he was walking to a favorite restaurant in Tacoma's Hilltop neighborhood when he noticed a policeman driving by.
He sees me walking. I have blue jeans, blue hoodie on.
He watches as the officer makes a U-turn.
And as I'm paying for my food, the officer is walking in the door.
The policeman walks up to the host.
But I'm sure the host said, "Who that guy? He's here every day. He's just buying his food." Officer walks out, doesn't say anything to me. Now, he took a lot of energy to make a U-turn and follow me in a restaurant.
He says that sort of selective scrutiny is an everyday occurrence if you're black. The Hilltop neighborhood is one Tacoma police have targeted with extra patrols because of crime. But Blocker and others say it's this added attention that leads to disparity in arrests for such things as marijuana.
If you're looking for something, you will find what you're looking for.
He says, in contrast, look at areas where police are not focusing their attention, places where there are a lot of white young people.
You could go on any college campus and find marijuana, you know, and those people aren't being arrested for it.
Blocker says he discovered this a few years ago when he was attending the University of Puget Sound.
If marijuana was to be purchased, I knew who to purchase it from, and it wasn't African Americans.
It was white males.
They would just drive freely around, sell to whoever, and they're not being targeted.
Blocker, who works with middle schoolers, says meanwhile, black and minority kids who are using or selling a little dope,
their whole life is being affected from one arrest.
Affected because having a record can mean you don't qualify for college loans, or you can have trouble getting a job. And for anyone under the age of 21, it will still be illegal to possess an ounce of marijuana. Paula Whistle, KPLU News.
You're listening to a KPLU News special, Marijuana, What's Next? I'm Keith Seinfeld, and I have a question for Paula Whistle, who just explained to us that while arrests will go down, it's not clear how much. It sounds like a lot of black and Latino kids still might be getting arrested.
Well, that's right, first of all, because if they're under the age of 21, it is still illegal to possess an ounce of marijuana. Or, as Pat Slack mentioned, they might be getting arrested for something else in addition to marijuana. And, of course, if you're dealing marijuana, it is still illegal.
Those white kids driving around weren't getting arrested, but the black kids still might be.
They might be, absolutely.
And if marijuana is not the main reason black kids and Latino kids are getting arrested, then why are the black leaders so in favor of legalizing?
Well, they really see it as a first step in ending the war on drugs. And more you're reading from scholars about the war on drugs and seeing it compared to the old Jim Crow laws in the South, the pre-civil rights era laws that really made black second-class citizens. And that's what you hear over and over again, that the end result of the war on drugs is that you have large numbers of black men locked up.
And that's primarily for drugs in addition to or beyond marijuana.
Cocaine, crack, heroin. Some people feel those drugs really, it should be treated as a health issue rather than a criminal issue.
Even if marijuana arrests are only a small part, it's a first step as far as they see. On the other hand, the sponsors of the initiative were telling us all along that will reduce the burden on courts and jails and that police officers will have more time to go after more dangerous crimes. So then how much of that will happen?
It's already had an effect. Counties across the state have dropped charges that had already been filed in misdemeanor marijuana cases, a couple hundred cases in King and Pierce counties. But that's really just a drop in the bucket. Mark Lindquist, the prosecutor in Pierce County, for example, said, I have 10,000 cases for the entire year, misdemeanor cases, so a few hundred is really not that much.
I guess the bottom line is fewer drug arrests for sure, but maybe not as many as promised. Thank you, Paula. KPLU's Paula Whistle. One other part of the law kicks in on December 6th, the part affecting driving. As KPLU's Gabriel Spitzer explains, the law is supposed to keep the roads safe, even after any adult can smoke pot.
I am at the Tacoma Police Department headquarters, and I'm waiting for Sergeant Bob Thompson of the Puyallup Police Department. He is part of this team called Target Zero, which is like a task force that runs DUI emphasis patrols, meaning they go out and they look specifically for drivers who are under the influence of drugs or alcohol. I just caught Sergeant Thompson on the phone a little while ago, and he said he just made a traffic stop, and he's heading back here now with the driver.
How you doing?
How you doing, sir?
Good. We're going right over here to Tacoma PD to do the process here. So
what's happening now exactly?
You got a person under arrest for DUI, so.
The sullen young woman in the back of Thompson's cruiser is headed to her official breathalyzer test.
Hey, Puyallup PD, I got a BAC on one.
Inside the police station, she blows a .09, exceeding the legal limit for alcohol in the blood. That's enough to send her to Pierce County Jail.
Hello. Hey, Puyallup, to book a female.
If the case had been about marijuana instead of alcohol, this would have been a lot more complicated. Alcohol has a per se limit. That means if your blood level's over, you're basically guilty. There's no equivalent for pot, so it can be trickier to bust someone for driving stoned than driving drunk. Initiative 502 aims to change that by establishing a legal limit for marijuana in the bloodstream. That would change a process that, right now, relies heavily on the officer's judgment.
You've got somebody that's doing some weird driving, driving abnormally.
That could be something as little as a wide turn or failing to dim your brights.
The officer has a reason to stop him. Person's not quite right.
The officer would ask the person to get out of their car and walk a straight line, stand on one leg. The driver might blow into a breath test to see if they're drunk.
And if they're impaired by drugs, they take him to the station and call for a drug recognition expert to come and do an eval.
A drug recognition expert is specially trained to spot things like quivering eyelids and a racing pulse. If he determines the driver is on drugs, he can request a blood test. But even if the test shows some amount of marijuana in the blood, up till now the law didn't tell us at what level the person is too high to drive. That's why Thompson says a lot of cops would like to see a hard and fast per se limit.
Per se's are always better. That's been an age old, ever since I've been in DRE, is why don't we have a per se law for, you know, drugs? And the problem is it affects people so differently.
The same dose might flatten one user and barely affect another. So fast forward to the courtroom. For a prosecutor, that uncertainty can be a challenge.
Prosecutors across the state have expressed frustration that they're having a difficult time proving cases involving marijuana-impaired drivers.
Courtney Popp is with the State Traffic Safety Commission working on DUI cases.
Some of those people think it's okay that if someone's driving under marijuana, then must not really be impaired.
Some of those people meaning jurors?
Yes, yeah. Jurors.
A legal blood limit is supposed to give jurors a concrete standard, but Pop says it wouldn't be so simple. Even a test that exceeds that limit, 5 nanograms of the active ingredient THC, might not be enough.
The defense is very vigorous in driving under the influence cases, and although it often feels as a prosecutor that if you have a blood test admitted, it should be an easy conviction, it's not always the case.
A defense lawyer might attack the science behind a legal limit. Attorney and activist Jeff Steinborn certainly would.
Virtually every one of the people who writes these studies ends up concluding the science really isn't ready yet for us to draw a connection between a particular level of THC and impairment.
The scientific studies back him up, to a point. Pot is not like booze. There's no broad agreement that 5 nanograms is the right number, or that there is a right number. But large authoritative studies conclude that marijuana does impair driving, and the higher the dose, the worse the effects, especially when combined with alcohol.
Everybody, drinky.
It's after midnight, and crowds of young people mingle in front of the bars on Tacoma's 6th Avenue. Sergeant Thompson is scanning the roads, looking for DUIs. He says the drunk drivers he arrests still outnumber stoned ones, but he believes that could tilt.
I just think you're going to see more people that think it's okay, and it's something you can buy at the store. You know, I just think we're going to see an increase in the number of collisions and the number of arrests for people that are under the influence of marijuana.
Coming up on 2 a.m., Thompson spots a black Lexus with the headlight out. Minutes later, the driver's on the sidewalk, trying to walk a straight line. Then out comes the breath test and the handcuffs.
What did I blow?
What did I blow? He asked the officer. 0.125 comes the answer. There's no argument. He's over the limit. The guy is drunk. Backers say the new marijuana law will bring that same kind of clarity to taking stoned drivers off the road. But like many things in a world where pot is legal, how it plays out could still be pretty messy. Gabriel Spitzer, KPLU News.
Messy or not, the blood test part of the new law is taking effect right around the corner. Gabriel joins me now in the studio. Gabriel, how soon will we see traffic stops that involve this legal blood limit for marijuana?
So the legal blood limit comes online at the same time as the possession provision on December 6th. But the thing is, you're not going to see a lot of changes in actual traffic stops. Where you'll see changes is more likely in court. So after someone is arrested, it could change the kind of case that the prosecutor brings against that person.
But the traffic cop or the police officer won't necessarily be testing more people's blood starting on December 6th?
Probably not. I mean, except to the extent that there might be more of these DREs, more drug recognition experts. In fact, the state troopers say they want to train lots more of these and maybe even make every single trooper a trained DRE. Those officers would be better trained to recognize the signs and symptoms of drug impairment, and so might be more likely to bring that person in for a full evaluation and a blood test.
But that only happens after they get trained, that's not going to happen right away, is it?
Right, exactly. And in fact, it's probably not going to happen for quite some time because they're depending on the revenue generated from this whole system of state-regulated growers, processors, and sellers. And that's not going to come online for another year yet, if not more.
I've heard, though, that if you're under age 21, that this new DOI standard is even stricter.
Yeah, it's very strict. In fact, it's zero tolerance. So if you're under 21 and you get caught with even any detectable amount whatsoever of THC in your bloodstream, then you could actually be arrested for DUI.
So if you're 19 or 20, better beware.
That's right, and parents too.
Thank you, Gabriel.
Thanks, Keith.
Gabriel Spitzer of KPLU News. You're listening to 88.5 KPLU. This is a KPLU news special called Now That It's Legal, What's Next for Marijuana? I'm Keith Seinfeld. It'll be legal to possess marijuana on December 6th, but not to sell it. Drug dealers are still felons, and those medical marijuana shops are not changing. That's because there's a delay for part two of the law. A year from now, hundreds of marijuana retail stores will be gearing up for their grand openings all across the state. KPLU's Bellamy Palethorpe examines the brave new world of state-licensed marijuana farms and has a glimpse of what a pot store might look like.
The closest thing to a legal marijuana store right now is a so-called medical marijuana dispensary. They're all over Seattle. Tacoma has a few as well. And you can go see what kinds of products they have.
Hi.
How you doing? I'm Jeremy.
Jeremy, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
It smells kind of nice in here.
Always. Your name is?
Bellamy.
Bellamy. Lovely to meet you.
I'm at the Center for Palliative Care in Seattle's Georgetown neighborhood, the CPC for short. It's a shop with a good reputation, an alternative to scary encounters with underground drug dealers. Co-founder Jeremy Kaufman says he's committed to the long-term goal of getting pot legalized nationally.
Anybody who's above board now, they're changing the experience of what has been something mostly horrific for everybody to something better.
I follow him through a brightly lit waiting room into what looks like an office with a big desk and shelves full of marijuana products you may not even know exist. He says they sell four types of products. It's not just pot flower buds for smoking. He explains there are also three other ways to get high: using topical creams on your skin, in oily drops that go under your tongue, and of course, there are food products such as pot brownies. All deliver the active ingredient in cannabis, THC.
You apply it topically, it's non-psychoactive, and it's acute. If you take it in combustibly, it's basically instant acting, shortest in duration, but highest arcing as far as the mental activity with the compounds that are involved.
He's standing near a small fridge full of pot-laced foods, hash caramels, and gummy candies. There are spice jars full of succulent-looking buds with names like Maui Wowie, Thai Cinderella, and Silver Surfer. Also for sale are colorful glass bongs and tiny hash oil vaporizers that do less harm to smokers' lungs.
Yeah, this is $110, and this is vaporization of flower plant only. So it's very small. As you can see, it's about half the size of a business card, about 3/4 inch thick.
So is this range of products what we could expect to see in a legal state-run pot store?
Wow, I don't have a clue.
That's Sharon Foster, a month before the election. She's the chair of the Washington State Liquor Control Board, which has to figure out how to implement the new law. Now the board is ramping up quickly and knows quite a bit more about all things marijuana. The agency was created 78 years ago after Prohibition ended in the U.S., and lately it's been closing liquor stores and watching over initiative-driven privatization of alcohol sales. Now it's also charged with deciding how many licensed pot stores there'll be in Washington and where they'll be located.
And it will certainly depend on density of populations, and local governments have the right to object, as do schools and churches.
She says, as they did with state-run liquor stores, they'll take input about the locations from local authorities and communities.
Now, they do not get right of refusal. We do at the liquor board. We make the ultimate decision, but we certainly give weight to local authorities and others as to whether they want that kind of establishment in their community.
Pausing for a photo over a cup of coffee, she says her agency would do everything in their power to make sure there's no criminal element in state stores. She says dispensary owners should expect new regulations.
We certainly wouldn't let them just flip their sign, and it probably wouldn't be much different than how we license somebody that's applying for a liquor license.
There would be strict screening with criminal background checks.
Fingerprint checks, and we would probably, as we do with a liquor license, set up a point system, and if you reach a certain point system, you are denied.
Ultimately, the liquor board's goal is to undermine the black market. And that means they have to make sure there's what the initiative calls an adequate supply so that the price stays low. They also need to keep the locations convenient for people who feel they need pot so that everyone has fair access. One challenge? Some of the most knowledgeable people in the industry have been breaking the law for decades.
I'm very excited to be talking about this finally after, you know, living this kind of lifestyle for the last 40 years when somebody asks you what you do and you either have to just change the subject or lie.
Jeff Gilmore says he's been quietly growing pot and earning lots of money at it since about 1977 when a down economy got him into the business. He likes the idea that Washington could create thousands of legit jobs while becoming known as a boutique producer in a whole new realm, kind of like craft distilleries or microbrews.
Why not let Washington be world known for growing high quality marijuana, just the way Tennessee is known for making good bourbon?
But the initiative says you can only consume it in private, and it remains to be seen who'll get to grow marijuana, where they'll grow it, and whether there'll be pot farms or just smaller greenhouses. All of that will be figured out in the coming months. Bellamy Palethorpe, KPLU News.
Our tour of what's in store under the new marijuana law takes us from pot farms to marijuana advertising. That's coming right up as our KPLU News special continues. KPLU's Bellamy Palethorpe is here now in the studio, and it seems like there are a lot of questions about how and where marijuana will be grown. I mean, official marijuana farms? That seems like quite a huge leap to a lot of us. What did you learn, Bellamy, about the most likely scenario for marijuana growing here in Washington?
Well, it's interesting, Keith, because growing is where the state needs to start as they build up this new system. But it's also something that is the least clear about the initiative and the way that the law is written. The main lobbyist behind the initiative, Allison Holcomb, told us that the most likely scenario would probably be unmarked greenhouses. And they're probably looking to Colorado for their cues here as they think about what this would look like. The medical marijuana industry there is much more advanced than anywhere in the country. They've completely transformed it into a really regulated industrial complex. They only have indoor growing in Colorado, and that allows the state to protect their crops and completely account for every ounce of pot coming from their licensed producers. So something like that seems like the most likely scenario for here in Washington.
Okay, so that state liquor control board is going to have its hands full. So what more do we know about the stores?
What Sharon Foster, the chair of the liquor board, told me is that it'll likely be something like the number of state-run liquor stores that they previously had under state liquor laws. And that was about 328 stores statewide, just to give you an idea. In fact, you can go online to kplu.org and see a little graphic we made showing where the liquor stores were, just to give you an idea of the kind of distribution based on population density and all of that. So it's going to take the state, they think, the full year that the law allows them to build up that system.
We know what those liquor stores look like, and I guess the marijuana stores will be something like that.
The law actually is based largely on the liquor law, and it stipulates down to the size of the signs that are allowed. You know, they're not supposed to be blatantly advertising in the community. They're only allowed to show what they are in a very kind of subtle way.
Thanks, Bellamy.
Thank you, Keith.
KPLU's Bellamy Palethorpe. You're listening to 88.5 KPLU. This is a KPLU news special. Now that it's legal, what's next for marijuana? We'll return to jazz music later this hour. might wonder if we'll be seeing marijuana advertising, like Joe Camel was for cigarettes, and if we'll be bumping into pot smokers every time we go out. Those stories are coming up. I'm Keith Seinfeld, KPLU News. Those marijuana retail stores and marijuana farms we were just talking about, they'll be paying some pretty stiff taxes. Most of that money is earmarked. Half goes to pay for basic health care, a portion goes to the general fund, and a big chunk goes to convincing teenagers to keep away from drugs. That got me wondering what sort of public messages we'll see on billboards and on screen when marijuana is legal. I mean, if you turn on the TV, it can seem like beer and wine are everywhere.
Costume party, girl, karaoke, dance-a-thon.
This is an ad for Corona Light with girls, music, dancing, all thanks to a frosty beer. This sort of commercial came to mind when I asked Denise Walker to imagine what marijuana advertising might be like in the future.
Alcohol ads are highly sexualized. It's all about fun, and you can see in the humor, they tend to really focus on young adults.
Presumably that's a good audience for a marijuana promoter too. Walker is a drug rehab expert at the University of Washington. She focuses on marijuana addiction. We met at her home in Tacoma, where it was lunchtime for her youngest daughter, 4-year-old Anna. Walker feels as it is, she can't let her girls watch sports on TV because of the ads.
When kids believe a substance is not very harmful, their rates of use go up.
She really doesn't want to see marijuana ads. The good news for her, we probably won't, at least not on TV, under Washington's initiative to legalize marijuana. TV and radio ads are regulated by the federal government, which won't allow pot commercials. And the way Washington's law is written, there won't be any big marijuana companies to pay for expensive ads. No Budweiser's, no Costco for cannabis, no big tobacco. On the other hand, we can expect the government to start producing anti-marijuana commercials. For example, the state health department paid for this anti-cigarette ad.
My smoker teeth look like corn on the cob.
Hey, how much for the corn?
Actually, this isn't corn. It's my teeth.
The radio ad grew out of audience research at the Seattle ad agency that created it. Pat Duty of Wong Duty Crandall Wiener says they were aiming at teens.
Trying to get 13-year-olds not to smoke. There was some research that said that something like more than 50% of teens said that they would not want to date or kiss a smoker. Now that became the nugget that we said, don't smoke, you'll be less attractive to the opposite sex. That's a compelling reason for a 15-year-old not to smoke.
From that nugget came a provocative campaign with dozens of ads focused on hygiene. Duty says a good anti-marijuana ad should also emerge after interviewing teenagers.
What we would want to do is find out from the target audience if there is any sort of compelling argument that might keep them from using it or experimenting with it.
The problem with that is public health experts want specific facts about marijuana to get out to the community. And they were able to include language in the ballot measure that sets aside millions of dollars specifically for a science-based campaign about marijuana's risks. Denise Walker of the UW says there's good science the public should know about.
One is that it is addictive, that there is the potential to become dependent on it.
Despite what you might hear, about 10% of users do become dependent. She says the public also should hear about a study that followed teenagers who became daily pot smokers.
By the time they were 38 years of age, their IQs were about 8 points lower than people who hadn't used marijuana in adolescence.
Could that idea, that it lowers IQ, get jazzed up by a clever ad agency? Pat Duty says they learned with tobacco that it's harder to get through to teens about their future health.
I believe that telling a 15-year-old that smoking marijuana is going to affect his IQ feels to me like a non-compelling argument.
Those teenagers will see some messages promoting marijuana. TV ads are off limits. Marijuana growers may not be allowed to advertise, but there's a lot more freedom for other groups using websites and events.
3, 2, 1, 4, 20!
A puff of smoke drifts up as a crowd at Seattle's Hemp Fest all light up their marijuana at 4:20 p.m. 4:20 is a symbolic number for the cannabis movement. Hemp Fest is a huge festival every August. Vivian McPeak, the executive director, says it's promoting cannabis culture.
In the same way that Oktoberfest happens in Germany every year, I think it just took place. Thousands of people got together and celebrated the joys of drinking beer. I don't see why HempFest would be any different.
HempFest is evolving. They just opened a year-round storefront in Seattle's Lake City. McPeak says if marijuana is legalized, he could imagine a billboard to support the lifestyle.
The message I'd like to see is that marijuana is a relatively benign natural herb. It's very manageable for people that choose to use it.
And you know, if you can make that choice legally, people will be lining up on both sides to influence you. By the way, there's already a group calling itself the Evergreen State Cannabis Trade Alliance. Will they be sort of like the Washington Wine Commission or Apple Commission? I'm Keith Seinfeld, and you're listening to a KPLU special report on what's next now that marijuana is about to be legal. Freedom of choice is not supposed to extend to teenagers. The new marijuana law says you can't consume it or possess it until you're 21 years old, just like alcohol. Still, all you parents may be forced into some awkward conversations. KPLU's Jennifer Wing looks at how one family is handling this discussion.
Teenagers and even tweens get into trouble with alcohol.
Now that marijuana is about to be legal, families might want to figure out what their boundaries will be. So far, 17-year-old Mary Cooper, a junior at Lakeside School, hasn't gotten that memo yet from her parents, Bill and Jane Cooper.
In recent memory, they've never told me, like, don't do marijuana. But, I mean, okay, I'm getting a look for my mom right now.
No,
but
we have not had that conversation. I didn't even think about it.
I think it's just assumed, because I consider myself a pretty good kid. We've had more drinking talks than pot talks.
While Mary's parents are more worried about the dangers of alcohol, Jane, Mary's mother, isn't thrilled there might be another substance on the market that could hurt her daughter.
Smoking pot, it's smoke in your lungs and in your veins, and it's a health risk.
Unless you're eating brownies or other edibles. There's a lot of good recipes out on the internet.
That's true. I suppose Bill makes a good point there.
Okay, so Dad is talking about brownie recipes. This is getting a little awkward.
It does not have to be comfortable.
Yvonne Monique Zick is a parent educator for Vashon Youth and Family Services. She teaches moms and dads how to have the talk with their children. Once you figure out what your boundaries are surrounding drugs and alcohol, Zick says you should talk about those boundaries a lot with your kids and ask them what they think. Just keep the communication flowing.
Research still shows that parents are the number one influencer of kids' decisions. So we still have more power than any other person in a kid's life. And I really ask parents, how are you going to use that power? Where do you want it?
Some questions from kids will be really hard to answer. If a child asks a parent if they use marijuana and the parent says, yes, I did, or yes, I do, Zick says that should be followed by yes and instead of yes, but.
If you're going to say yes, right, say yes and. And the drugs are different today. They are bred for maximum impact. We just know more now.
And that's why parents are encouraged to say,
wait, just wait.
Zick tells parents that a good way to get teens and tweens to hold off trying marijuana is to lay out a list of positive consequences.
You're going to get more freedom. You're going to get a driver's license. You're going to be able to go out with your friends, and I will trust you to be where you say you're going to be.
These are the benefits 17-year-old Mary Cooper is enjoying as a result of the trust she's built with her parents. Mary has no interest in trying marijuana, but she's not blind to what her peers are doing and informs all of the adults in the room that getting a hold of pot is a lot easier than scoring a pack of cigarettes.
When teenagers say that they smoke, you just already assume that it's like marijuana and not even cigarettes at all. It's just different from other drugs because it seems less harmful.
Bill, Mary's dad, supports legalizing marijuana and hopes the public health campaign that's required by the law will educate young people like his daughter about the health risks.
Because, you know, there's plenty of studies that show the effect on growing brains and, you know, dropping 8 to 10 IQ points is very, very plausible. It's kind of like breaking in a new car. You've got to go easy when you're in that engine is young.
And the fact that it's going to be like wine and alcohol when they're 21, will it be socially acceptable in your family?
That's a good question.
I think that would be really weird.
As the parents ponder this question, Mary, the 17-year-old, jumps in.
There's so many lines we have yet to cross with our relationship, with my relationship with my parents. And I think that would just be a line that would be so awkward and weird.
For Mary, just the thought of going out to a bar with her mom for her first drink when she turns 21, something mom talks about doing, is hard enough for her to think about. The idea of adding marijuana to that milestone just makes her cringe. Still, Mary, Bill, and Jane are ahead of the game. At least they've started this conversation. Now they just have to figure out how to keep it going. Jennifer Wing, KPLU News.
This is 88.5 KPLU. I'm Keith Seinfeld, and you're listening to Now That It's Legal, What's Next for Marijuana, a special news broadcast from KPLU. We'll return to our jazz programming in about 10 minutes. Washington might seem like the new primo destination for pot smokers, along with Colorado. As we try to imagine if marijuana will become as commonplace as beer or liquor, we sent KPLU's Ashley Gross on a scouting mission.
Where will people use it? Will the guy you pass walking his dog be smoking a joint? Will you see people at a bar sharing their pot brownies? To find people who have been trying to imagine this, I went to an event almost like a marijuana trade fair put on by the magazine High Times. Folks were hawking their wares, everything from drug-infused candies to smoking devices.
We're going to give away a free trippy stick. Why don't you at least come see what the buzz is about?
It's hard to mistake the smell as you walk up to the Medical Cannabis Cup, put on in Seattle's Fremont neighborhood in September. Medical marijuana growers are competing for awards for the best weed. There's an outdoor area where medical marijuana patients are allowed to smoke. The atmosphere is more county fair than doctor's office. Kevin Griffin has a booth with marijuana cotton candy and Jolly Enhancers, a pot version of the Jolly Rancher candy.
We have everything from watermelon, fruit punch, kiwi, lime, banana, lemon lime.
Tim Main sells his cannabis mints and tinctures in 16 medical marijuana collectives. He sees state legalization as a business opportunity.
Would you try to sell the mints and tinctures then in the state-run stores? Or?
Yes, absolutely. I would. You would see the product in the state-run stores for sure. That's why we created this brand. We created it to mass produce it.
He launched his brand, Mary Jane Mints, this past summer. Maines imagines creating a coffee shop that also sells marijuana edibles.
Where people can actually buy medicated food, then also get coffees, pastries that aren't medicated like a normal store would be, but just more of a relaxed vibe in there, you know, almost like a cannabis lounge.
The kind of cannabis lounge Maines is dreaming of may be impossible. The language of Initiative 502 stands in the way. Attorney Allison Holcomb of New Approach Washington drafted much of the initiative. She says they made a conscious decision to avoid Amsterdam-style marijuana cafes after doing research on what kind of system would be most palatable to voters.
There was less support for the notion of places that you could consume marijuana on site, or you could purchase it there and consume it on site, than there was for being able to purchase small quantities of marijuana and take it somewhere private.
So the initiative says marijuana would only be sold in state-licensed standalone stores, similar to the state-run liquor stores that existed up until this year. You won't be able to buy it in a bar. Could you use it there if you brought your own? You wouldn't be able to smoke it because of indoor smoking laws. But what about edibles like marijuana bonbons that have no smell? The initiative also says you can't use marijuana in view of the general public. Defining what that means is tricky, even for Holcomb.
I think that means that not only can you not be smoking a joint as you're walking down the sidewalk, but it probably also means that you can't sit down in a restaurant and take out a big bag of obviously marked pot brownies and start eating them.
She says a bar could risk losing its liquor license. Could you use marijuana at a Mariners game? Nope, that's still considered in view of the general public. How about at the beach? Nope, same thing. People might ignore the rules and still get high in public because the penalty is so light. The initiative treats public use like a $50 traffic ticket, and enforcement may vary. Already in Seattle and Tacoma, police are relatively hands-off. Perhaps that's why organizers of the Medical Cannabis Cup felt safe to host the event in Seattle.
Hold your smoke so you can blow it. Hold your smoke. Hold your smoke.
at one of the booths there, a man and a woman simultaneously inhale from vaporizers called trippy sticks. Then they blow out the smoke, competing to see who can make the biggest cloud. As much as the organizers say this is an area for medical use, this is a party. So much so that two tourists from Long Island, New York, have traveled to Seattle just for this. I asked one of them, named Joe, what he was most surprised by.
The freedom. Just like everybody's out here with weed. When you turn around the corner, you smell the weed. If we were around our way like this, there'd be a million police over here.
Tim Maines, who makes marijuana mints, says he thinks there will be more events like this for everyone, not just for medical users. In fact, he thinks a whole new industry will crop up.
You're going to see an influx of businesses, entrepreneurs, people. We actually call ourselves ganjapreneurs. Yeah. So you're going to see an influx of people that are just looking to make some money.
People like Maines, who want to create social venues where marijuana can be used in public. Users may test the boundaries, too. That could mean the crowd of people next to you at a bar may be enjoying something more than a glass of Cabernet. Ashley Gross, KPLU News.
So get ready. Testing the boundaries of the law seems to happen every day. It's up to police to choose whether to crack down on jaywalking or drinking on public beaches. I'm Keith Seinfeld. You're listening to a special broadcast on Marijuana, What's Next? Out of all the future scenarios we've described, the marijuana stores, the marijuana public health advertising, the marijuana private clubs, it's possible none of them will happen. That's because the shadow of the federal government looms over legalization. Ashley Gross has been talking to legal experts and tracking comments by federal officials. So Ashley, if a drug like marijuana is illegal nationally, it's on the federal controlled substances list, then why does anyone here think that we can get away with having it be legal?
Well, the sponsors are kind of hoping that the federal government might treat it in the same way that they have with medical marijuana, where the federal government hasn't challenged those laws. They've cracked down in certain cases on dispensaries. But they're hoping that the federal government might kind of be hands off in that regard. And they're also hoping that it's not maybe going to fall under the concept of interstate commerce. Everything is enclosed here in Washington state. For example, former U.S. Attorney John McKay, who supported the initiative, told NPR's Wendy Kaufman that he's hoping the federal government will step back and let states like Washington and Colorado just try it out.
Our hope is that the federal government will look at the state of Washington and say, this is a good faith attempt to address the regulation of this commodity of marijuana, and that historically, the states have been laboratories for change. Let's see if this approach could work.
Laboratories of change, I feel like I've heard that before. And then even just this week, Governor-elect Jay Inslee used that phrase. So I guess that's the sales pitch they're using. Is that interpretation widespread enough that there's reason to think the Justice Department might go along?
You talk to three experts and you get three completely different opinions. I spoke with one, Sam Kamen, who's a professor of law in Colorado, and he's written a lot about legal issues surrounding marijuana. And he says medical marijuana is one thing, but selling it like alcohol to anyone over 21 is just, he thinks, taking it too far, that the federal government is not going to stand back and let that happen. And as for the idea that this doesn't fall under interstate commerce, he says that he doesn't really buy that, that the Supreme Court has already ruled a few years back that homegrown marijuana for personal use in California, that falls under interstate commerce, that there's the potential for that marijuana to affect supply and demand across state lines or pricing across state lines. So he thinks that the federal government has probably a case to make.
And we've already seen that the government of Mexico was quick to point out that, hey, wait a sec, we have these international drug trafficking laws. We're supposed to be cracking down on these gangs that are smuggling marijuana, and we're getting a mixed message north of the border. So I imagine there might be a lot of pressure on the federal government to not let Colorado and Washington just be laboratories. And so how would they stop us from implementing it?
They might just do really aggressive crackdowns and arrests of people for possession, which is, would still be illegal under the Controlled Substances Act, for selling, for growing marijuana. They could do that. They also could sue to block the whole law under the idea of preemption. The federal law preempts state law. So we could see a lawsuit like that come in and shut down the whole process of setting up this system. We're really right now in kind of a wait and see mode. Governor Chris Gregoire met with Department of Justice officials recently to see, you know, are they going to sue to block the law? And didn't really get any indication one way or the other. And Washington State's really at the vanguard, both culturally and legally, by passing this law.
Thank you, Ashley.
You're welcome.
Ashley Gross of KPLU. We have more questions still about how all this will work, and some of those we'll just have to wait until more details emerge in the coming months. You've been listening to a KPLU News special broadcast called Now That It's Legal, What's Next for Marijuana? I'm Keith Seinfeld, host and executive producer for this special. We had contributions from Ashley Gross, Bellamy Palethorpe, Gabriel Spitzer, Jennifer Wing, and Paula Whistle, with additional assistance from Nick Morrison, Aaron Hennessy, Jake Ellison, and Joe Cohn. You can find all of these stories and much more in-depth coverage at the KPLU website. Stay tuned. Jazz is next. Thank you.